tribes. Brothers are dying from the 12 tops. Dying, homicide, multiplying in public town housing. Project demise is sound. Layers, layers of the slaughter. Sacrificial violence. Jane Child, the council. Jane Holy, smiling at the bird. Young friends fulfill the rules of the prophet. Our sins, we curse with guns, crack, holes, and fools.
Wake up, black people, wake up. All I'm not going to make them oppressed with. Step on with them. Don't you say that they get away and cry in the air. We have to get up, stand up, turn back to the true trend. The more side, the last.
Trying to escape this futile. Who child is time to jungle is too wild. That's why we got more than two styles. To adapt in the situation, I'm too shy. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungle is specialist, critical and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening. On Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. That's in the Black Belt, and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there also. Full of new podcasts of the various programs on Time for Awakening and interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, or even share with your friends. Again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. TimeForAnAwakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we have a special guest scheduled to join us, activist, organizer, and founder of the New African Independence Party, Brother Khalid Rahim, will be in conversation with us this evening. and we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. And you know, sitting here ready to really develop more into understanding something we've been talking about with Brother Khalid, as far as this, and how do you go about developing an independent Black political party or assembly, which is so much needed in this time, it seems. So you know, looking forward to the discussion.
You know, all of this is an extension of things we've been talking about for a long time on this program with other guests, Omawale Yeshitele, Zaki Baruti. All of these things kind of follow in that pattern to let our people know that we can do something instead of this same old thing that we've been doing every 2 and 4 years, listening to the cheerleaders get out there and tell our people to vote. Your life depends on it. Your ancestors died for the right to vote. Let's kind of get a little bit of background on, and before we introduce our guests, I want to play a clip here let me get this together. Guest was speaking in a rally at Pittsburgh in front of supporters of the New African Independence Party. Let me play this clip of our
involving
guest.
The young man who was murdered.
Yes. Peace. This is Paradise Gray with One Hood Media. I'm standing here with Brother Khalid Rahim, and we just had a real powerful meeting, and we're convening to do a rally on August 9th against the Fraternal Order of Police in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Why are you here today, good brother?
Well, we think it's very important that the people need to send a very clear and precise message to the Fraternal Order of Police. How dare they come to the city of Pittsburgh and decide to have a national convention on the same day that Mike Brown was murdered by the Ferguson police up in Ferguson, Missouri. So we want to send a very distinct and strong, powerful message to them that we know who they are, we know whose interests they truly represent. Yes, they are a union, but they are a union that does not represent the interests of regular working people. And so that's one of the main reasons for us calling upon people, not just in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, not just in Ferguson, Missouri, but folks from all around the country, especially those cities that have chapters or lodges of the FOP. The FOP has been directly responsible for supporting and advocating on behalf of some of the most notorious and controversial cases involving police murder, terror, and misconduct. Most recently, the case involving the young man who was murdered by a University of Cincinnati police officer just over a week ago. Who came to his aid? The FOP. He was given bail. First of all, he was charged with criminal homicide. He was given $1 million bail. He needed 10%, which is $100,000. Who came to his aid? Both his financial aid as well as his political aid? The FOP. We look at the situation up in Baltimore when Freddie Gray was murdered by 6 police officers. Who came to the cops' aid? The FOP. We look at the situation here, like in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Whenever the police do some crazy stuff that makes no sense to nobody else in their right mind, who comes to their aid? The FOP. So we're saying down with the FOP. We want to create a national movement and mobilization to monitor and watch the FOP and make sure that they do justice. And if they claim to be a working class union, they need to act like a working class union founded in a working class city.
That's right. Thank you very much.
Let's welcome our guest, Pittsburgh activist and organizer and founder of the New African Independence Party. Brother Khalid Rahim is with us. Brother Khalid.
Yes, sir. How you doing, brother?
How are you, sir?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
oh, good.
Loud and clear.
Thank you. Peace be upon all of you. I'm glad I'm able to speak with you this evening.
Yeah, Brother Khalid, you know, we want to touch on some things during the 2 hours that we have on the air here. Some of the initiatives I'm going to get to because they're definite things that our folks need to know about, centered around the organizing of Black unions, reparations, and also what you spoke about in that clip there, battling against the FOP. But before we do that, definitely some of the planks and platforms of the New African Independence Party. Before we discuss that, let's talk about you, Brother Khalid. You're like myself, Brother Richard, and members of our listening audience. We hear stuff happening. We see stuff going on in this community, in our communities, and in this country in general, centered around our people. What makes you different than some of the other folks is that you decided to do something about it. Talk about the formation of the New African Independence Party, how it came about, and why you did it.
Well, the party actually started in 2012. I had been thinking about what could be the possible alternatives to the Republican as well as the Democratic Party when it came to dealing with electoral politics, and what part could electoral politics play in advancing a Black liberation agenda. I had been involved in some other formations and groups in the past, and I also had an opportunity to study various formations and groups, not just the ones that I was directly involved with, but those that had came afterwards and those that came before. And so when I did the research and did the study and I looked at the political situation that existed back in 2012, which still exists even today, what I couldn't help but notice is that when you really look at political activism within the Black community, it was very limited because there were no viable choices and alternatives for Black people except the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, and the vast majority of Black people were registered as Democrats. And that the Democratic Party had a long history of basically suppressing and suffocating any genuine hopes and aspirations for Black freedom and liberation. They had a long history of co-optation. They had a long history of misdirection. They had a long history of appropriating good ideas, good ideals, good movements, good programs, good projects, and finding a way to take all the fight from them and all the power from them and bring them right back into the mainstream of the Democratic Party, which we have to be very clear that the Democratic Party is a party of racism and white supremacy, just like the Republican Party is. And the Democratic Party is a party of capitalism and imperialism abroad. So fundamentally, the conflict between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party is not over whether Black people should be free or working people should have justice or people of color should be free from racism and white supremacy. The conflict between Republicans and the Democrats is how best to manage the U.S. empire, how best to manage the American empire. Not that the American empire needs to be dissolved and not that it should be replaced with a more just society and just government. So when we come to understand that, we can clearly see that neither political party as a party is really in the corner of Black people when you talk about Black freedom and Black liberation. So in 2012, having done the research, having done the study, I said, what can we do to create a bona fide political party that will be able to participate in electoral politics as well as engage in social justice activity, as well as engage in movement building, as well as engage in social demonstrations, social protests, and all the other things that a lot of groups and formations who call themselves political parties do. And so with that, I moved forward and I started the New African Independence Party. We wanted to come up with a name that could identify with the history and with the legacy of Black folks in this country. We wanted to come up with a name that could identify with the history and legacy of struggle and the yearning for freedom and self-determination. And we thought that the name New African and the word independence would best suit our purpose. And so that's what we did.
Brother Khalid, because I want to break into some of the platform planks here. But before I do that, Richard, you wanted to jump in with something in reference to
the notion of creating an independent party is something that's been definitely around in our community for a long time, especially since the 70s, or that's where I kind of focus now. So my question is, in you coming and developing that formation, what was the process of putting the party in place? You came up with the idea. I guess you identified other people of interest to assist in formulating the idea. What other things did you have to do in relationship to the New African Independence Party?
Well, the first thing I wanted to do is to make sure that the party was representative of my personal politics. And so my politics is the politics of revolutionary Black nationalism. I consider myself to be a revolutionary Black nationalist. In terms of my economic philosophy, I would say my economic philosophy is what we call New African Socialism. So I wanted to make sure that this party would reflect my personal politics, but I also wanted to make sure that it would be a party that would be able to embrace the various cultural differences and the various cultural and religious differences and distinctions that exist within the Black community. And I didn't want a party whose ideology would be so narrow that the only people who could participate would be people who agree with everything 100%. Having worked in other political formations in the past, I had a sense of what type of challenges and struggles would lie ahead. I was born and raised in Philadelphia, and I've lived in Pittsburgh most of my adult life. But when I was in Philly, I was involved with the Philadelphia chapter of the Black Panther Party. And so I went through that experience, and I learned a lot. They really put my boots on. They introduced me to what it meant to be a revolutionary and what it meant to be politicized and what it meant to be of service to the people and to be of service to the community. And they introduced me to an international perspective as well. So having grown up through the Black Panther Party, I understood very well that, yes, I'm Black, I'm African, I'm New African, but that doesn't preclude me from recognizing the exploitation and oppression that other people may also be subjected to under this particular system within the United States as well as around the world. So the Black Panther Party helped me to develop a revolutionary nationalist perspective, but also a internationalist perspective. So I definitely owe quite a bit to them. I also was involved with an independent Black political party, and that was his name. It was the National Black Independent Political Party, NBIP. And NBIP, by the way, when it had this founding convention was in 1980 in Philadelphia, and it attracted thousands of people, delegates from all around the world, really from all around the country, and some people from outside, but mostly people from within the United States. And that, too, was an experience that I was able to reflect upon because I was an active member of NBIP. And even though I was not privy to all the ins and outs of what was going on with the national leadership, I certainly was aware of what I perceived to be some of the contradictions and conflicts that I believe led to the dissolution of MDiv. The fact that it was not really able to fulfill the mission that it had originally put out. So I drew upon those experiences, and I've been involved in the communities. I've been involved around different issues and movements and causes for decades. And so I reflected upon all of that, and I said, ha, okay, we need to develop an independent Black political party that is going to be based on the history and based on the legacy of the things that I just spoke of, but also in a much larger way, be based on the history and based on the legacy of Marcus Garvey and the Black Panther Party and Stokely Carmichael and the SNCC and the Republic of New Africa. You know, we really owe a tremendous debt to the Republic of New Africa because they provided us with a very distinct and very unique political identity that is backed by history. So those are the things that I looked at, and that's what pushed me to the point of creating the New African Independence Party.
And the thing I wanted to follow up on, and in that brought in, I would like to, you know, go kind of in the nuts and bolts for the, in a few minutes, but, you know, at some other point. But yeah, made reference to in looking at the electoral politics and asking the question of what does the electoral politics or play? How does it play? As a party, what did you come down in your assessment from the study and analysis? What part does the electoral politics play from an independent perspective, especially right. independent party perspective?
Well, let me say this. Let me just kind of give you a real quick response as far as the logic that is used for justifying or, I guess, giving some theory to the creation of the NAIP. And this is it. I mean, I've said this thousands of times to people. When we look at the Black activists, the Black radical community, we talk about those who embody the Black radical tradition. We march, we protest, we demonstrate. Some of us throw bricks and bottles. Some of us even take a few shots. But when it's time for the people to deal with electoral politics, the vast majority of our people have no alternative that truly represents their needs. And even the vast majority of people who are activists, I'm talking about Black activists, the vast majority of Black activists, those who do engage in electoral politics, oftentimes they turn to the Democratic Party. And so they play the game of the lesser of two evils. But we all know the lesser of two evils is still basically fundamental evil. And so we said we have to come up with something that really speaks to our needs. And we can't play the lesser of two evils game. And we can't keep turning, looking the other way, knowing that the Democratic Party is a party at home that supports white supremacy and capitalism. White supremacy and capitalism with a smile, right, when it comes to Black people, where they use other Black faces and places to maintain control over the larger working class and low-income Black communities. And then outside of this country, you know, Democratic Party politicians support imperialism abroad, just like the Republican politicians support imperialism abroad. Democratic Party doesn't hesitate to authorize bombings and droning and missile strikes against Africans, Asians, and Muslims all around the world. So considering all of that, we said, or we concluded, we have to have an independent Black political party that's going to really speak to the Black radical and Black revolutionary tradition, that's going to uphold those political ideals and those political practices of the groups that I named before. Marcus Garvey, Stokely Carmichael, Ella Baker, Huey Newton, Bobby Seale, Republican New Africa. Those are the things that we wanted to promote, and that's what we represent.
Go ahead, Richard. Go ahead.
No, you know, the thought came to me as you were laying out. It seems that we, you know, you laid out what how did you come to developing, being a part of developing the party and the vision and mission of the party. I'm always using this term infrastructure, especially right. as we talk about dealing with the electoral process, you know, getting involved in the electoral game. And one, would you consider that involvement being clear, if I'm being clear, that is a competition with the Democratic and Republican Party, you know, or one, that's who we're competing against. And
right.
two, what is it that the party would need in order truly to be competing other than defining any party, any political
right.
association that represents Black people? What would it need in order truly to be competing in the electoral process against the Democrat, Republican, or whether it be the Green Party or any other association out there?
Right. Well, basically, the things that the party needs are just committed people, basically committed people. If you have committed people, if you have dedicated people, then you can generate the funds that you need to engage with electoral politics. we are indeed an electoral political party as well. So we're not just a political party in the sense that we have a political agenda. We have a platform, we have a program like the Black Panther Party or the Republican Africa or some other political formation. We are a bona fide electoral party. So we're registered, for example, with the IRS. We can run candidates for local office. We can run candidates for statewide office. We could run somebody for the presidency. We don't have the capacity to do that right now. So we are a full-fledged electoral independent political party. Mm-hmm. So in terms of what we need in order to be competitive, we need people. We need people to embrace the fact that we now have an independent Black political party that really technically is the only independent Black political party in the entire country. Mm-hmm. Right? We have members, we have supporters in about 30 states around the country now. Locally, we've engaged in four different electoral campaigns. One campaign, which was our very first, we got 12% of the vote. It was for a county council race here. Another campaign, we were dismissed from the ballot because our signatures were challenged, and it was kind of a rush thing for us. I was not the original person selected to be the candidate to represent the party, but because the person who was going to be the candidate had to deal with some family issues, I stepped up and I became the party's candidate, and that was like a two weeks before the deadline for the signature. So we ran out and we gathered 1,000 or so signatures, and initially the signatures were accepted by the Board of Elections and then the Democratic Party establishment here in Pittsburgh. They panicked and they filed a petition about an hour before the deadline, and we had to go to court. So we lost that battle. We did win two elections here for positions called the Judge of Elections, the people who basically monitor when people come in to vote and, you know, monitor the polling places and check out the voting cards and the voting machines and do all that. So since we've been involved with electoral politics, we've ran four different campaigns. Out of the four, we've had two successes. We've suffered two losses, and both losses were learning experiences for us. One was a campaign for county council, and one was a campaign for mayor for the city of Pittsburgh. We look forward to running more campaigns. If you haven't noticed, right now, a lot of people are engaging in electoral political struggle. And right. This is really being pushed hard through the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has made a point to groom Black candidates, especially Black women.
Yes.
Right. And to push them in the forefront.
Yep.
Right. Under the pretense of, okay, we're going to make some changes now. But the Democratic Party itself is still the Democratic Party establishment. You do have different wings and different formations within the Democratic Party. I like to think of it this way. You have the Democratic Party corporate establishment, and then you have an element within the Democratic Party that is pissed off because Hillary Clinton, even though she won the popular election, she didn't win the Electoral College vote. They still think that Hillary Clinton should have been the president. Then you have another faction that is still hanging on to the legacy of Barack Obama. You know, Obama's no longer the president, but they still hold him up. And since he's a Democrat, then they get involved based upon that. Then you have a faction that is pissed off because within the Democratic Party, they shortchanged Bernie Sanders, right? So he has his own faction still within the Democratic Party. And many of them have now joined what's called the Democratic Socialists of America. Okay. So you have about three, maybe four different factions within the Democratic Party who are all contending for power and for position. And they use the Black community because the Black community is one of the most active and most loyal segments within the Democratic Party. I think the Black electorate within the Democratic Party is somewhere about 20 to 25%. And if you go throughout urban America, if Black and brown people don't vote for the Democrats can't win. Mm-hmm. And the Democratic Party knows that. And they also know that within the black community, especially at this stage of our development, we have a disproportionate number of women who are able to move about and able to do things. And I'm not saying this in a sexist, stereotypical way. I'm saying that because based on our analysis, this is a lot of that has to do with the impact of the war on drugs and the phenomenon known as mass incarceration. So we have disproportionate numbers of boys and men who are incarcerated. And even those who aren't incarcerated, they have to deal with the collateral consequences of having convictions, which means they may be on probation, they may be on parole. Even if they're not, they're very cautious. They don't want to be involved in social movement. They don't want to make no noise. And then some of them are still caught up into a criminal lifestyle. So the Democratic Party has been organizing, and they've been grooming a whole new cadre of black people to represent the Democratic Party, so as to strengthen their ranks and so as to funnel and lead black people en masse back into the control of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is not a party of revolutionary or radical change, and it's proven that it's not a party for any type of revolutionary change for black people. That kind of came to an end in the late 60s and the early 70s. It really didn't exist in reality, but the hope that it would become that type of political party kind of fizzled out in the late 60s and the early 70s.
We're in conversation.
Elliot, to pass it back to you, but, Brother Gilead, when you mentioned about grooming, because in just a couple of weeks ago, September 7th and 8th, they had what they called the Arena Summit here in Philadelphia. And basically, that's what they were doing. They brought out a whole cadre of new people that they were grooming for the Democratic Party. So your analysis is spot on as far as what they're doing to send out people into the black community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's basically it. I look at it as a new cadre of neo-colonialists for the most part. And that doesn't mean that all these people have that type of mentality. Many of them are very sincere and very genuine. They see an opportunity to change the Democratic Party. They see an opportunity to change politics within America. And many folks are really reacting. They're reacting to the election of Donald Trump. And the Democratic Party has been very successful in framing the message when it comes to politics within the black community, framing the message as the goal is to unseat or undo Donald Trump, right? And so you have black politicians or black wannabe politicians, what they fall back on if you critique the Democratic Party, they fall back on it. Well, you know, we still got to get rid of Trump, Brother Khaled. Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's true, brother. But you know what? If Trump stays in there, it's going to be worse. So it's the same boogeyman type of politics that the Democratic Party has been playing and playing on and playing with the black community for decades.
Mm-hmm.
It's Trump now. Before Trump, it was Bush 2. Before Bush 2, it was Bush 1. Before Bush 1, it was Nixon. Before Nixon, it was Eisenhower. And they was kind of ambivalent with Eisenhower because he was a moderate Republican, right? But they've been playing that same game for years, right? They were playing the same game. I remember as a child growing up in Philadelphia when Johnson was campaigning, right? And you had the contrast between Johnson and Barry Goldwater. And I remember being just being like a little dude, right? And they had already planted the seed in my mind that Barry Goldwater was just a step away from being the grand wizard of the KKK. And that if we really wanted to be free in Philly, we all had to support Johnson, right? So, I mean, that's the kind of foolishness that's been going on. That's the kind of foolish politics that's always being pumped into the black psyche, right? The Democratic Party is always the boogeyman. The Republican Party is always the boogeyman. The Democratic Party is always the savior. Where when you look at reality, you check out the stark reality, if you look at all the major cities across this country that have any sizable black and brown populations, and you look at all the issues and challenges that we face, we talk about double-digit unemployment for black people. We talk about mass incarceration. We talk about police brutality. We talk about failing public schools. When you look at all of it, over the last 40, 45 years, these cities and these various municipalities have been under the jurisdiction and under the supervision and direction of people from the Democratic Party, not the Republican Party. So that says a lot. You know, I don't know how it is in Philadelphia now, but I know like a couple of years ago, I would make reference to Philly because, well, Philly doesn't have a black mayor now, but I would make reference to the fact that Philadelphia, like a few years ago, had a black mayor, had a black chief of police, had a black superintendent of schools, had many blacks on the Philadelphia City Council. And with all of that, right, I think Philadelphia, let me see, that particular year, Chicago closed 50 of their public schools, and Philadelphia turned around and closed 25 of theirs. Right. The police violence got so, right. The police violence got so bad in Philadelphia that one particular year that the black police chief, I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he himself admitted that it was an issue with his own police force, and he called for the U.S. Justice Department to intervene, to investigate his own force. Now, but, you know, he's a black police chief. So those are the things that we point out to people, right? That this is not the 1950s and the 1960s, where we only had a handful of black appointed and black elected officials. Now we literally have thousands of black officials all across the United States. Even with that, look at the condition of black people collectively. It doesn't reflect that. We've had a black president, which is the highest political expression of power that you can have here within the United States. And even with 8 years of Barack Obama as the president, we still had to constantly deal with police-involved shootings of black people, whether it was black men, black boys, black children, black girls, it really didn't matter. And black women, it didn't matter, right? And he was the chief executive officer for the United States, right? So having a black face is not the solution. We recognize that. Having a black political party that is just another political party and not a vehicle to pursue black freedom, black liberation, and self-determination is not the solution either, right? So we're not just another black political party. We're not the radical version of the Democratic Party. We're not the pissed off blacks from the Republican Party. We represent an independent, revolutionary, radical formation that believes in reparation, self-determination, and freedom for black people. And that's what we stand for.
We're in conversation this evening with activist and organizer and founder of the New African Independence Party. Brother Khalid Rahim is with us in conversation this evening. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Rahim, we're getting a little clicking sound in the background. I guess everybody's phones is different, but we'll fight through it. But Brother Rahim, the example just gave a minute ago. In fact, we just talked about that Friday, about Philadelphia being a model to other blacks around the country, just looking on the surface, where right. Every political office of power was run by somebody, well, put it this way, had a black face in the seat. I mean, it's not that way now because the mayor is white and there's a few other right. The offices is white. But a couple of years ago, every seat that you could think of that had some type of a power was a black face sitting in it. The thing that was different is that the mindset, the only thing black was the complexion of the person's skin. Their mindset was totally run by other people, their interests, the special interest groups. That's how gentrification takes hold in several of these cities as black, because it's black faces that helps these other folks. I'm looking at the platform planks. Well, you had about 16 planks here, but I'm looking at the platform of the New African Independence Party. And I just want to read a couple of these because the platform is not what you're going out asking people for. And it's not the fact of you're asking this power, the power structure for anything, but it's the mindset that has to be developed among people that represent the party. Let me read a couple of these and get you to expound on them. You've already have done that in your conversation tonight, but I think it's important, just the same. Now, you, like I said, you have about 16 planks here that's on my sheet, but I want to focus in on maybe the first four or five of your platform, the national platform. The first one, we want freedom, and we want power to determine the destiny of our new African or black community. Number two, we want the complete dismantling and abolition of white supremacy. Number three, we want reparations for slavery, state-sanctioned terrorism, and Jim Crow. Number four, we want freedom for all political prisoners. And number five, we want proportional political and judicial representation. That first one, Brother Khalid, we want freedom and we want power to determine the destiny of the black community. That in itself is not the mission, the overall mission of black elected officials. It's not. You can see the way they operate.
Right. You're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, that first plank is taken directly from the 10-point platform, the program of the Black Panther Party.
Okay.
We just changed a couple of words in it, but we take that directly from the Black Panther Party, right? The Black Panther Party that was founded by Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale in October of 1966. You know, and we had to learn that as members of the Black Panther Party. We had to learn that. We want freedom. We want the power to determine the destiny of the black community. So we incorporated that into our particular platform, and we just added and modified it a couple of words because we believe in new African self-determination and new African nationalism. In the sense that we think that we have a right to claim the territories in the southern part of the United States as a home base for our nation, which means that all black people throughout the United States of America would be part of that nation, but our base would be in the South, which, by the way, the majority of black people still live in the South, contrary to the imagery that we get promoted through popular or mass culture. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. That is not the mission of most black elected or appointed officials. Most black elected and appointed officials come through the Democratic Party. Democratic Party, again, is not the party for black self-determination or freedom. The Democratic Party was at some point a party that was for black justice and for helping black people to challenge and to dismantle Jim Crow. But so was the Republican Party. The Republican Party was originally conceptualized as an anti-slavery formation, right? So things changed. So we said we need to come up with our own political party that reflects our history, reflects our history of struggle, our history of resistance, as well as our history of survival. And we need to come up with a political party that is going to advocate and push the things that are in the collective best interest of black people, not a small select elitist group, but the vast majority of black people. And the vast majority of black people are not celebrities. We're not all-star basketball, football, baseball players. The vast majority of black people go to work every day. If we own a business, most of our businesses are small to medium at best. We don't make millions and millions and millions of dollars each year personally. Okay. So we want to create a political party that would represent those interests, the vast majority of black people who work, some who are unemployed, many who work are underemployed, people who have criminal records, criminal past, formerly incarcerated people, formerly convicted people. That is our political party. We represent those elements within the black community. The single parents, mostly black women, right? We're their political party. Okay, that's who we represent. And that's whose interests we advocate.
You know, I just saw the, about a week ago, we talked about, because you notice the media is playing up Gilliam in Florida, and Ayanna Pressley up there in Massachusetts. And we talked on the program about our people looking behind the scene, so to speak, pulling the curtain back from the wizard, similar to the movie The Wizard of Oz, and see the little man pulling the levers behind the curtain. And when you look behind, and like you said, these people might be good people. They might have a honesty at heart. But when you look behind the forces pushing them, Gilliam already said in published reports and publicly that he's behind in support of Israel. Is Jewish money behind him? Ina Presley, her campaign advisors, Jewish. It's money behind these folks. I just saw a published report yesterday where Biden is going down to campaign for what's the woman's name in Georgia? Richard.
Yeah, her name escapes me.
Yeah. So we see exactly what you're talking about. I think our people get caught up in the imagery when they see, just like they get caught up in the imagery of Barack Obama, a younger black man or younger black sister, but they don't realize the wizard behind the curtain, so to speak. But it's not in black folks' best interest when you look at these candidates. And they don't realize it until after they're in office for sometimes 8 years to find out that they've been on the treadmill and their feet have been moving, but we haven't went anywhere as a people.
Exactly. Brother it's, Otis, like a rat, Brother Otis, it's like a rat in the lab. That's right.
Brother Otis gives us the name of the...
Stacey Abrams. Person. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I just saw where Biden is going to campaign for her down there in Georgia. So it's the same players in this game. They haven't changed their mindset. You gave an excellent example earlier of Johnson and Goldwater. Now, mm-hmm. Goldwater was a straight out racist bigot. And by the way, Hillary Clinton was a Goldwater girl. But Johnson was a Dixiecrat.
Yeah, she worked at Goldwater's office the campaign.
Johnson was a Dixiecrat. He wasn't really any different, but the black people had the impression that Johnson was some friend of the black community, especially after he signed the 64 Civil Rights Bill and the Voting Rights Act.
Right.
But he was doing what was best for the country at that time. Not that he was no friend or loved black people.
Right. So, again, for us, knowing all that, for us, it's important that we do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, one of my criticisms and one of our critiques of the conscious movement, as it likes to describe itself, is that the conscious movement is very heavy with understanding history and is real good with analysis of things that have happened in the past. And it does a fairly decent job at analyzing things that are going on today, but it doesn't come up with a program. It doesn't come up with some type of strategic plan for some remedy or for some relief or for some revolution or for some radical change. And so what we try to do is to move beyond just the critical analysis and start to focus on what can we do, what needs to get done, right? And how can it get done? You know, we even have a lot of folks within our community, they can tell you forever what black people should be doing. But if you ask them, well, how are we going to get it done? They don't have a clue.
Okay.
And so I respect them for what they bring to the table, and I respect them for what they could do. But we need to have folks, man, who can not just give analysis in terms of historical analysis or contemporary analysis, but now sit down and come up with some strategic plan, some strategic ideas. How can we move from point A to point B, right? And so that's what we try to do. We see ourselves as a political party that is about action. So we're not just sitting around doing analyses or, you know, writing papers and holding meetings and conferences, looking down at community saying, well, this is what you should be doing. Our thing is, how can we all get together so we can make it happen?
And that's, you know, Brother Khalid and Elliot, this is the point that you just made, Brother Khalid, as far as how can we come together. Because, and if you don't mind me using the term, the conscious community, and one thing I, and I'm looking for your feedback about this, that I believe is that we haven't, though we can do the analysis, and though we, but we haven't formulated ourselves as a political body. We're individual. We're probably more anarchists as individuals. But what I hear that the New African Independent Party does it and could do is provide us a place where we can go and implement our analysis, which I don't see that we do. We are more individually making analysis and using platforms or starting platforms, but we haven't formulated in a political body to implement the agenda. So that's one part. And the other part is, who would be, I was wondering, is there some historical model that reflects the electoral formation that the Independent Party is, the New African Independent Party represents, saying we know we're not new, but is there something, you mentioned the Panthers and others, what model that, you know, especially as it moves to, as it deals with electoral politics. So those two parts of whether we engage those who will call ourselves conscious in a political formation, and the other are the model where we were engaged or could be engaged.
Well, let me say that the best way that I can describe what I would hold up as an ideal model is to describe what was a failure. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when I look at the Lowndes County Freedom Organization,
yes, I agree.
Because that was the original Black Panthers, right? They were the ones who originally used that symbol and they became known as the Black Panthers. But the Lowndes County Freedom Organization certainly gave us a very good idea and a very good example of where we should have been headed back in the 1960s. In the 1960s, rather than try to break down the doors of Jim Crow when it came to electoral politics, i.e. the Democratic Party machine, we should have backed away and develop our own independent Black political party,
mm-hmm.
right? We certainly had the numbers, especially throughout the South, right? And we could have become a more formidable force. I think we would have been in a much better position to influence the Democratic Party as well, because you would have been able to leverage our independent Black political power and say to the Democrats, you know, if you want us to support you, you have to really support us. And so maybe we can support each other when it comes to certain pieces of legislation. Maybe we can support each other when it comes to certain social issues. But just as you made reference to President Johnson when he signed the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965, basically that sealed the deal for the Black community, the national Black community, to and to act as if we would always be beholden to the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And the Democratic Party has used that political capital and that entitlement to basically control and to contain us for the last several decades. So I would look at the Lowndes County Freedom Organization. What they started out with doing, I think, was great. I would look at the Black Panther Party in the Republic of New Africa as examples of what we failed to do. The Black Panther Party, when it did get involved with electoral politics, ran through the Democratic Party instead of running on its own as the Black Panther Party. The Republic of New Africa, even as we speak, elements of the Republic of New Africa, people who still identify with the PGRNA, Provisional Government, the Republic of New Africa, and folks who were part of the Malcolm X grassroots movement and the New African People's Organization in Jackson, Mississippi, mm-hmm. when they started to get involved with electoral politics, they decided to use the Democratic Party. Now, initially, I believe there may have been some justification for that initially, but at some point, it was time to move on. Jackson, Mississippi, for example, has a Black population that's over 80%, right? Brother Chokwe Antar Lumumba is the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, and he ran as a Democrat, and he won. His father, Brother Chokwe Lumumba, before him, he ran as a Democrat, and he won. Before that, he ran for the city council of Jackson, and he won, right? But they get all of this through the Democratic Party in the city whose population is 82 to 85% black, in a region that is referred to as the Black Belt, in a region that is alluded to by members of the Republic of New Africa as part of the New African Territory. So, and last but not least, they've been down there for decades. So they didn't just arrive 5 years ago. They've been in that area building and organizing for 40 years plus. So if you've been there for 40 years plus, and if you got a black population that's 80% plus, and you still running your politics when you decide to do electoral politics, you run it through the Democratic Party. To me, that's not smart. I would apply the same critique to the Black Panther Party when the Black Panther Party decided to get involved with electoral politics in the early to mid-70s. With all the popularity that the Black Panther Party enjoyed and with all the widespread support that the Black Panther Party had, even when the various forces were concentrated again in Oakland, the Black Panther Party didn't run as an independent political formation. It ran through the Democratic Party machine. And Bobby Seale came close to becoming the mayor of Oakland. He came close. He did very, very well. But I like to think he would have did better if he had ran as a candidate of just the Black Panther Party on its own name, period. And even if he had lost, he would have been able to generate such a political base mm-hmm. so as to build this independent Black Panther Party from that point on.
Let me, because we missed our break at the top of the hour, I'm going to still take it, but let me grab a call before we go to our break. Let's go to 267. 267? 267, are you there?
Hey, good evening, Elliot. Good evening, Richard. I want to say good evening to your guest. I agree with what your guest said to a certain point, like the conscious community analyzing the situation instead of doing anything about it. I'm glad that they got to the point where they're analyzing it, my brother, because for a while, the thing we got to do, I said, it starts with us as individuals. The thing I've done, and I can only talk about myself and what I try to get across to other people, even people who pretend, and I'm going to say this, and I don't care who it pisses off, even people who pretend to understand the harmful effects the Democratic Party has on our community, they're still registered as Democrats. And they still talk about Trump, even though they know what's going on with the Democratic Party. They're still registered Democrats. I say the first thing of action we need to do is get out of that party and become independent. That's number one. Number two, like, don't even become engaged with this nonsense about Kavanaugh and all that BS that's going on the mainstream media. Get out of that. That's not even our fight. Our fight right now is for survival. And the thing I do, you got to come to me. Now, there are organizations out here that I used to belong to. I no longer belong to them because I don't see them practicing what they preach. But you got to come to me and let me know what you're going to do for me and my community before I even pull a lever for you. But like you said, over and over again, they use this guy in the White House to scare the hell out of people. And they run up there and they vote for something for the FOP still doing what the FOP do. Because that's who backs the Democratic Party in Philadelphia, the FOP. And the Democratic Party backs the FOP. That's why that Sylvester Johnson couldn't do anything with the abuse that the police officers were doing to the community, and he had to ask, you know, the wolf to come to the chicken house just to try to stop the situation. See, this thing, and I'm glad. I'm being honest with you. I am glad that we are starting to be analytical, because I used to get my behind kicked in for even trashing that Trojan horse called Barack Obama. I mean, I took a tongue lashing. I took a tongue lashing for coming up against people like Al Sharpton that backs this political nonsense. We have to become independent first and get out of that party and show these people that we are serious. Even just like the scam they ran down there in Alabama or Mississippi or one of those places with Doug Jones and the so-called pedophile. 89% of our black women, went out there and voted against the pedophile. But yet when this man gets into the, it's over and over again, we get smacked in the face. And I analyze it, but I also let people know why I analyze it. Get out of that party. Stop supporting that party. They even bought the Trojan horse here on Friday, gave out free tickets for a get out and vote rally because the people in Philadelphia are starting to wake up and find out that we have no friends in city council or under the Democratic Party. People are waking up and seeing that. So I'm glad that they have come to a point where they're analyzing these things. But now it comes to a point where we have to have action. First thing first, get out of that party. I don't care who they vote in. They can vote in David Duke. Things won't change. So,
Let me say this, brother. Let me say this. Yeah, so let me say this to what you just said in terms of your declaration. I mean, everything else you said, I agree with 100%. Matter of fact, your declarative statement, I agree with too. But what I realized is that we have to have an alternative, right? We got to provide the people with an alternative. We got to move beyond just saying, get out the party. We got to say, you need to get out that party, and here's the party that you need to get into. And so that's another reason we created the New African Independence Party. Because again, as I said earlier, and maybe you didn't hear that part, we march, we protest, we demonstrate, we throw bricks and bottles. Some of us even take a couple of shots. But when it comes to electoral politics, we had no vehicle. We had no alternative but the Democratic Party, right? Some people use the Republican Party as a wedge against the Democratic Party. If the Democrats don't treat us right this election cycle, let's vote for Republicans. And maybe that'll send a message to them. And so some people did that a couple of times, and that worked a little bit. But the bottom line is we didn't have the insight nor the courage to step away from both of them and say, let's start our own political party. So that's what we did up here in Pittsburgh. And what I'm saying is that's what we have to offer to the people. We have to offer to the people an alternative. I agree. We need to get out the Democratic Party, but we got to have a place that we can call home. And so what we say to people is, if you want to have a home, come to the NAIP, come to the New African Independence Party, come to a party that represents your interests, come to a party that's going to uphold your history and your legacy in terms of fighting for freedom and fighting for justice and fighting for self-determination. So I agree with you, bro. Straight up.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And I'm glad that they brought you on tonight. So I understand this thing is a process. It just doesn't come overnight. It's a process. And like I said, I'm glad that the people are analytical now, because there was a point in time, if you said anything against the Democratic Party or their spokespeople, you would receive a tongue lashing. And the thing about it, Republican Party, I wouldn't dare pull the lever for them. But I'm not pulling the lever for the Democratic Party because I see them both as wings of the same bird. So I'm glad that you are giving us an alternative. I understand that. And I'm down. I'm definitely down.
Thank
you. You know what I mean? Okay. I've been an independent since Bill Clinton because I saw the game all the way back then. So,
I want to encourage you to do this. Well, thank you, sir. I want to encourage you, if you get a chance, go online, look for newafrican.org. And if you go to our website, newafrican.org, you can join the party. The other thing, let me share this with you. A lot of people who I've talked to, they support what we do. They want to join us and get involved. But they say, well, when it comes to the primaries, if I'm an independent, I can't vote in the primaries. I said, well, in the state of Pennsylvania, at this point, you can, because the primary elections are basically election to make a decision within a party who's going to be put on the ballot to represent that party. That's what the Republican primary is all about, and that's what the Democratic primary is all about. But Pennsylvania continues to be one of the handful of states around the country that has what they call closed primaries. In most of the states in the United States of America, they have open primary systems, which means that anybody can vote during the primary, whether you belong to their party or not, whether you're Republican or not. But in Pennsylvania, they have the closed primary system. And since in at least southeastern Pennsylvania and southwestern Pennsylvania, most of the registered voters are Democrats, if you're a Democrat and you win the primary, basically you won the election. Because in the general election, you ain't going to have no competition. There have been elections in southwestern Pennsylvania, and I mean serious elections, where the offices that were being contended were very significant, right? Where there was no opposition. There have been folks who have ran for city council, who ran for county council, who ran for a state rep, right? Who had no opposition after the primary. No, there was none, because they won the primary, they were Democrats, so they're a shoo-in, it's their victory, right? So there's been some talk about changing that. I read not too long ago, actually the first time I read about it was a few months ago, after the primaries here in Pennsylvania, that there was a politician up in Harrisburg who was making yet another proposal that Pennsylvania move into an open primary structure or system instead of the closed primary. And then I read about a week ago that is that idea and that proposal is picking up a lot more support and steam up in Harrisburg. So now you got Republicans and Democrats alike. They're saying, yeah, we probably need to get out of the Stone Age, but we need to have an open primary, because we're losing a lot of civic participation, a lot of voter engagement. Most people don't realize this, but even with the 2016 election, the largest number of registered voters were the people, well, let me say this, the largest number of registered voters didn't vote. They didn't even vote. You see what I'm saying? So I think, like, if there were, I think it was like 42 million who voted for Trump and 43 million who voted for Hillary. But there were 100 million registered voters who didn't vote for either one of them. Think about that. Think about that. There were 100 million people who could have voted for either one of them who said, I ain't voting for neither one. I ain't voting for nobody, period. And a lot of it has to do with how politics is done in this country. There's so much money involved, so much corruption involved, so much racism involved. It's all about maintaining white supremacy. But we have to challenge that. And as long as we can constitutionally organize, have political parties, have voting, have elections, we need to have a vehicle that's going to push our Black liberation agenda and the people's liberation agenda in order to do that. You know, I get the pushback and argument from some brothers and sisters. They say, well, man, voting don't matter. You know, I ain't going to vote. Man, we just need to go to war. And I'm like, okay, well, if voting doesn't matter, right, then you shouldn't get mad at what's going on with Donald Trump and his administration. If voting doesn't matter, then you shouldn't get angry and you shouldn't become dissatisfied when you see what's happening with your local politicians and the laws that are being passed in your city, or the laws being passed by your county government or by your state government. You shouldn't get angry, because voting doesn't matter. And you don't vote, you don't have nothing to do with it. Or if you say, well, I'm not part of the system, I say, well, go all the way. Because if you work every day, or you run a business every day, and you still pay taxes whenever they take taxes out of your check or out of your payroll, but you decide that you're not going to utilize a voice that should come with you paying those taxes, then as far as I'm concerned, you're a fool. You know, the way that we teach that everything is political. Politics is just not pushing a button. Everything is political, right? Who picks up your trash, when they pick it up, whether the police come to your door and they knock on the door and they say they have a warrant, or whether they come to your door and they kick it in at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. All that stuff is politics. All that stuff is political. So if you want to have a voice, or if you want to use the voice that you still have, you have to engage in politics. You have to engage in that struggle for power that struggle to control the resources, that struggle to determine how things are going to look in your neighborhood, in your community, in your schools, in your hospitals, in your place of work. All of that stuff is political. And we should never concede any territory, any ground to our enemies and adversaries just because at this point in history, they have some material type of advantage over us. If anything, we should organize even more and fight harder so we can regain an advantage that we lost, or so we can get an advantage that we never had.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll go right back to the phones. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with activist and organizer of the New African Independence Party. Brother Khalid Rahim is with us. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. Amen. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up, and that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're in conversation this evening with activist, organizer, and founder of the New African Independence Party. Brother Khalid Rahim is with us in conversation. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Khalid?
Yes, sir.
Let's go. Go ahead.
I'd like to make a couple of comments. There's some echo in the background. You may want to check that in the studio. But I'd like to talk briefly, if I may, about the different projects, programs, and initiatives that our party has been engaging in.
Oh, certainly.
And one of the things that we've been doing most recently is to help to facilitate and organize a civilian police review board for Allegheny County. Your listening audience may not be that familiar with the politics in southwestern Pennsylvania. But in southwestern Pennsylvania, Allegheny County is the county which holds the county seat, the city of Pittsburgh. And the city of Pittsburgh is the second largest city in the state of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia being the first. And Allegheny County is the second largest county in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia County being the first. And so what we're trying to do is to facilitate the creation of a civilian police review board for all of Allegheny County, not just the city of Pittsburgh. Right now, the city of Philadelphia and the city of Pittsburgh both have citizens police review boards or accountability boards. We would like to see something for all of Allegheny County. Why? Well, for one thing, Allegheny County probably has more municipalities or separate governmental jurisdictions in any county within the United States of America. Allegheny County right now has 130 different municipalities with over 100 different police departments. So you could literally get on the bus or be in your car and travel 5 or 10 miles in any direction and be in a whole different jurisdiction with a different mayor, different city council, borough council, and a different police department, right? And you may have heard recently, back in June, a young man from Allegheny County was murdered by one of those municipal police officers. A young kid by the name of Antoine Rose Jr. was murdered by a cop named Michael Rosfeld, who shot him in the back three times as he was fleeing from a car. And fortunately for his family, fortunately for Antoine Rose's family, it was all caught on video, and they were eyewitnesses to what happened. And so that police officer is about to go to trial probably in the next couple of months or so. So a group that the party helped to organize, the tape that you played when the show first started, that tape was from 3 years ago. That was from 2015, when the Fraternal Order of Police held this centennial conference in Pittsburgh. Now, why did they have it in Pittsburgh? Well, what a lot of people don't realize is that, number one, the FOP, Fraternal Order of Police, is the largest police union in the country, probably the largest police union in the world, because I don't think they have a police union in China. So I think it's the largest police union in the whole world. They have about 300,000 members, and they have hundreds of thousands of supporters, including district attorneys, their wives, their families, judges, a whole bunch of people. They all support the FOP. The FOP was founded in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 1915. So they decided to have their centennial conference on the same day that was the one-year anniversary of the murder of Mike Brown. What the party did, what the New African Independence Party did, was to meet with other groups and folks throughout the area, and we organized something that we wind up calling a national mobilization against police brutality and the FOP. So we held demonstrations in downtown Pittsburgh at the site where they were having their 100th anniversary conference. And so that is what you heard, right, on that tape that you started playing from the very beginning.
Okay.
So from that group, we continued to stay together. We worked together, and we said, well, let's try to come up with a civilian police review board for all of Allegheny County. So we started working on that process about 2 years ago. And we had scheduled a meeting with a county council person who said he would support it. And about a week, literally about a week, if not days, after I had a conversation with this county council person, that's when the young kid, Antoine Rose, was murdered by the cops in East Pittsburgh. And so where we are now, we lobbied, and there were two county council people who led the charge in bringing other county council people together. And they took a vote, and it passed by a very slim margin. It was an 8-7 vote in favor of Allegheny County looking at the possibility of creating a civilian police review board, and they would convene 4 public hearings throughout the county so they could hear from the people. So we supported that process, and we've been involved in that process. Last week, for example, this week, I was part of one of those public hearings that was held, and I sat on a panel. There was a guy who represented the Allegheny County Police, and he was in opposition. And so he and I, we had to go head to head. And, you know, he presented his piece, and I presented our position. And so the group that has been leading the charge on this is a group that is called the Committee for a Civilian Police Review Board of Allegheny County. And so there's one more public hearing scheduled. We hope that Allegheny County Council will pass some additional legislation. We also ignited a fire under some of the local politicians here, the state senate, the state senators, and the state reps. We also got them to get support from a state senator from the Philadelphia area, Sharif. So now there's more discussion on the state level about changing the law so Allegheny County can have the jurisdiction and authority over these various police departments, probably starting out with at least the Allegheny County Police. But we want jurisdiction over all the police departments throughout Allegheny County, whether it's the Housing Authority, whether it's the Port Authority, whoever, to bring them all under one umbrella and set up this civilian police review board So they would be subject to some civilian oversight as far as their behavior, their accountability, as well as their policy. So that's an example of some of the work that the party is involved in. We're also involved in organizing a black union, a new African workers union. What we've experienced here, and I'm sure it's the same thing in Philadelphia, at least to a certain degree, is that a lot of development projects, a lot of workers on these development projects, we see very, very few black or brown faces. And the brown faces that we see don't come from our communities and don't come from our areas, right? And we also understand there's a collusion between the Democratic Party establishment and the union bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
And that neither one, as we all can see, don't support blacks being free. They want us to maintain this dependent relationship with them. So we have our own political party. So now we're in the process of organizing our own union, right? So that's another initiative that we're involved with. Not necessarily electoral politics, but it's all geared towards self-determination for our people and for our communities. And last but not least, and this is very significant, we have a campaign we call the People's Campaign for Reparations and Black Self-Determination. If you go on Facebook, you can find the pages for it. If you go online, check out our website, there's some additional information. We've been moving this campaign along. We've organized some community forums, a series of community forums throughout the rest of 2018 in different communities around Allegheny County, where we will be discussing with the people what reparations is, what black self-determination is. We want to learn from them, and we also want to share some information with the people as well. Part of that campaign involves a national survey. So we have a national survey that you can take, and it asks a series of questions regarding reparations, regarding self-determination, questions about what do you think are the most significant or the three most significant issues facing the black community today? Should the civil rights movement or should the movement for human rights or black freedom be going in a different direction? Do you support reparations? What do you think about an independent black state? I mean, so those are some of the questions that we put out to the public. And our response, the response we've gotten so far has been very enlightening and very informative. The vast majority of people support reparations. The vast majority of people who took the survey, their parents and or grandparents were born or raised in the South. The vast majority of people believe that reparations should involve cash, land, benefits, health insurance, tuition vouchers, housing vouchers. Just to give you like an overview, the vast majority of people also support the creation of an independent state based in the South. So we want to keep this up. We encourage people to take the survey. And by the way, this survey solicits input from all people, not just black folk, not just African-American folk, but all people. We want anybody who's willing to take the survey, take the survey. We want to get your honest opinion and your honest perspective on these issues and questions. This is not a plebiscite, but if after the survey has been ended and we process the results, if we determine that there's a need for some additional work in these areas, then we could indeed be moving towards organizing a national plebiscite, which is something that many of us have been talking about for decades, from the Black Panther Party, from the Nation of Islam, as well as the Republic of New Africa. So I just want to give you an overview of some of the work that we're doing outside of electoral politics.
John, are you politics, there?
Yeah.
Hey, you hear him? He's talking about a survey.
You know what? What we're going to do, because these phones are acting up, I'm going to take a brief break. When we come back, because I got some calls that want to talk to you, Brother Khalid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
When we come back, I want to go to these calls, but I got to get these phones together. So we're going to take a brief break. Everybody that's on hold, if you get knocked off, I want you to call back during the break, because I want to speak to everybody that's on hold. We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we have Our guest tonight, activist, organizer, and founder of the New African Independence Party, Brother Khalid Rahim, is with us. We're going to take a brief break. If you get knocked off, if you're on hold, call back during the break. I got to get these phones situated. We'll be right back.
Okay. Well, keep telling me, that's the New African Independence Party. They're doing a survey on reparations.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. As other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
Now you preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you of the West. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Thank you. Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wineskin, or your day of leading our people is over and it will never come back to you again. We're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party. Still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and it's always something when you're dealing with live radio. You with us, Brother Richard?
Yes.
Good, good, good. Let me get Brother Khalid back on. Brother Khalid, you with us?
Yes, sir. I'm
good,
still here.
Good, good. Let's go back to the phones here. We had to take a brief break.
Okay.
I had to get some things straight. Let's go to Newport News. Newport News?
Good evening, gentlemen. How you doing?
How are you, sir?
Good, man.
Brother Khalid, I just want two quick questions. What do you do to energize and recruit the youth? And do you have committees that are kind of keeping their pulse on what's going on in planning commissions and boards and stuff like that? I love what you've been given so far.
Okay. Yeah, in terms of just trying to keep energized, we, for the first almost 4 years, after we activated the party, again, we were founded in 2012. We didn't really go public and start to organize until 2014. But for the first 4 years, from 2014 all the way up until just the last part of last year, we held political education classes on a weekly basis. Sometimes we had no people. Sometimes we had two or three. Sometimes we had a pretty decent crowd. We also have remained active throughout the communities that we live in. So we're a real political party in the sense that we deal with electoral politics, but we also are real black people. Right? We work, we have children, grandchildren, we have jobs, some people have businesses on the side. And so we deal with all the ups and downs of living here within the United States of America. And so that's how we stay in tune with the community through our activism and through our political education classes, as well as the other events that we hold throughout the year. Every year we have certain events. So we start out in February, what we call the Founders Day, Malcolm X brunch, since we were founded on the day of Malcolm X's assassination, February 21st. So every February the 21st around that weekend, we have our annual brunch. And then from there, we have other different events as well. We have the Malcolm X brunch in February. We have the Malcolm X celebrations in May around his birthday. We have usually one, possibly two. And then we have our annual conference, which is held every birthday weekend of Marcus Garvey. So Marcus Garvey's birthday is August 17th. So we always have our annual conference during the Marcus Garvey birthday weekend. Those are some of the things that we do on an annual basis to stay involved with the people, stay involved with the community, let the people know that we're still around and what we do. We also run candidates for office whenever we have an opportunity to do so. And as I just mentioned before the break, we also have different campaigns. So we have three specific campaigns that we're involved in now. One around police accountability, one around an independent black union, or what we call New African Workers Union, and the third campaign is around reparations and black self-determination. The other thing in terms of our structure and how we get things done, how we'll set up, you can go to our website, newafrican.org, look under the sections around membership and organization, and look under the section around organizational structure. And I think that should answer your questions.
He's gone, but we'll go to our next call. Let's go to, caller, are you there? Texas, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to 267. 267?
Yes, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Good, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
Good. Brother Khalid.
Yes, sir.
Good, brother, good. Listen, I like what you did, sir, when you came in the forming of your party. You started with the interior structure of the ward. You do the judges of elections. I guess as time will come, you'll probably get committee people, run committee people. The head committee person is the ward leader, and the ward leader controls the vote. So that way you have multiple committee people. Those little committee people will probably run for state rep and mayor and Congress and things of that nature. I like we did that. Interior.
Okay, well, let me stop you. Let me correct something. That's not the type of structure that we have for our party. What you just described, and listen, this is not a slant on what you just described, because this is typical of what we hear.
Wow.
Most black people, because we've been brought up under the Democratic Party structure, woo, most black people, when they talk about political structure, they describe exactly what you just described, because we think that's the only structure that exists. But that's not the structure for New African Independence Party at all. We don't have that type of structure. We don't have committee chairs and ward chairs and stuff like that. We don't have that at all. Now, we know that that exists when we go to run for different offices, right? If I go to run for a county office, I go to run for a city office, I know that they have that type of structure, but that's not the structure of our party. That's the structure of the Democratic Party, and that's the structure of the Republican Party. And because most black people are registered Democrats, we have a tendency to think that that's like etched in stone, but it isn't. That's a function of the Democratic Party. Just like they created their structure, we created ours. So okay, I want to thank you for your comments, but I just want to kind of make that clear. Okay.
That's great. My other question to you, sir, is that the 10-point program that the Panthers got came from the Nation of Islam originally. It doesn't make a difference whoever it came from. It mm-hmm. works. My other question, sir, is to you that when Bobby Seals and Milana Karinga and all those folks started that study group in Oakland, they went different directions. Karinga, a nationalist, with his nationalist influence, went one direction. Bobby Seals and Healy went another direction. And I thought when they looked at the Communist Manifesto and they visited China, that when they looked at Mao's work, Mao Zedong's work, and they looked at Karl Marx, the Communist Manifesto, that in the Communist Manifesto, there were no blacks in Europe. So when it comes to shadow slavery, that wasn't incorporated in there. So my thing is that when Bobby and they were looking at the structure of socialism, they always had in their mind to include white people. That's what the separation was with Karinga and the Panthers. Of course, Karinga had the group called Us, and the Panthers were the Panthers. So my question to you, sir, is were you influenced by Khalid Muhammad as a Black Panther?
No, not at all.
Okay, because
no,
I'm saying that when he had formulated the Black Panther Party, he used Ngumo Sagna, and he used some of the Karinga's work and things of that nature. And he probably, being the vanguard of the Black Panther Party, that probably would have turned into electoral politics with it. But I think he would have kept it black.
Okay, well, let me say this. Okay, so listen, let me put something out there quickly. first of all, I'm a former member of the Black Panther Party, not the new Black Panther Party. The Black Panther Party is founded in October 1966 by Huey Newton and Bobby Seale. I'm quite familiar with the history of the Black Panther Party. I'm quite familiar with the legacy of the Black Panther Party. I honor it on a daily basis, okay? And I'm quite familiar with the political development of the Black Panther Party, right? The Black Panther Party started out initially as a Black nationalist organization, then it became a revolutionary nationalist organization, and then later on it embraced something that Huey Newton had articulated called intercommunalism, right? And that was after his release from prison in 1970, okay? Right. So I'm quite familiar with the politics of the Black Panther Party. I'm quite familiar with the Black Panther Party's political growth and development and transition. That has nothing to do with Brother Khalid Muhammad, who came from the Nation of Islam almost 35 years later. It has nothing to do with him whatsoever. The New Black Panther Party is called the New Black Panther Party, but the New Black Panther Party, first of all, Brother Khalid Muhammad didn't even found that. That was founded by some people who had some affiliations with the original Black Panther Party from out of Dallas, Texas. Right.
So my question, sir, do you use the Red Book? Because they use the Red Book.
Listen. We don't use the Red Book. Okay. And we don't have to use the Red Book. Now, you know, we respect it and we appreciate it and we do make reference to it. For example, when I mentioned earlier about some of the criticism, and it's righteous criticism, but some of the criticism from some of our brothers and sisters within the community when they say, well, we don't want to deal with no political stuff. We don't want to deal with electoral politics. We don't want to deal with no politics at all. It don't mean nothing. We just want to fight. And so I understand where they're coming from, because one of the things that we learned from studying the Red Book, right, 50 years ago, you know, something that is described to Chairman Mao when he talked about politics, and he said that politics is war without bloodshed. And he said that war is politics with bloodshed. So those are lessons I learned decades ago. And so we try to draw from those lessons in our party today. So we understand that right now, the United States government is still relatively intact. Martial law has not been declared. We still have First Amendment rights. We still have rights to put together political formations. We got a right to speak, we got a right to gather. So we need to use those rights to push our agenda for Black freedom and liberation. When martial law is declared, when the Constitution is suspended, then we can talk about the possibilities and the likelihood of armed struggle.
Thank you for your call, sir. You know, Richard, you got something you want to add? Because I know that you didn't make a... Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't really have, it was interesting what you were saying about the survey, Brother Khalid.
And yes, sir.
And the feedback from the survey.
Yes, sir.
How expansive is the survey to date as far as the
The survey has been active now for a little less than a month. We had about 100. Yeah, it's relatively new. We've had about 140 respondents so far, and out of 140 respondents, what I mentioned before has been basically the results. The vast majority of people, when I say vast majority, the vast majority of people, about 80-85%, identify themselves as having parents or grandparents who come from the South. The vast majority of people, 90% to 95%, support reparations. The vast majority of people, when I say vast, I mean 80 to about 85% see Black people as a separate entity here within the United States, right? The overwhelming majority of people support reparation, about 95-96%. Within that group, about 40% prefer, 42% prefers land, about 40% prefers cash, and the vast majority will prefer a combination of money, land, free tuition for school, free health care, and other benefits, right? And it's about a 70-30 in favor of the creation of an independent Black nation based in the South. So I'm just trying to give you an overview, and also about 90% support proportional representation as well.
You know, the other thing that came to my mind is for those of us who are not a part of the party, but we want to see the party process grow and more members become, you know, participants, because we agree with the vision and goal. How do we support the party without being a party member, or how can we support?
Oh, well, most definitely you can join either one of these campaigns. I mean, you don't have to be a party member to join the People's Campaign for Reparations and Black Self-Determination. You don't have to be a party member to join the committee. If you live in the Allegheny County area, you don't have to be a party member to join the committee and get involved to create a civilian police review board for Allegheny County. And you don't have to be a party member to join the New African Workers Union. So you can be a non-party member and participate in all three of those campaigns and all three of those initiatives. Okay. And in addition to that, support us financially. You know, we have all types of donate buttons, push a button and send us some money. We have an office up here. We have an office in the Pittsburgh area, right? We got to keep our office open, got to keep our office functioning. We need money. We also look for volunteers. We need people to help us to do voter registration and education work. We need people to help us when it's time for us to run candidates for office. Because we're an independent political party, when we run candidates for office, it requires us to go out and get signatures, right? So we need people to help us to do those type of things. And you don't have to be a member of the party, you know? So, yeah. We're also in the process of trying to put together what we call a New African Liberation School, you know, starting out small, perhaps just a weekend class or two for different youth and in certain communities. And we want to teach them from an agenda that's based on our platform and program.
Right. You know, Richard, I, based on the last caller's questions, I picked up something that was that's really eye-opening. Because when the caller started out talking about the structure of ward leaders and Brother Raheem stopped him and said that that what they're doing, not what they're planning to do, but what they're doing is not based on that.
That
right away, that lets me know that these brothers are not only onto something, but know what they're doing. Because when you start out with your premise based on this crap that these Europeans have set up and is basically full of graft, full of special interests, and full of influence, then we'll be going down the wrong path. So I'm glad that it's not set up on that type of basis. And also, you know, when the caller brought up about the Karenga and Mao and Red Book, Green Book, see, this is what derails a lot of initiatives along with COINTELPRO. This is what derails a lot of initiatives that we start out with: religious ideologies, factional differences. See, these white folks, you can have white extremists, white moderates, and white liberals, and they'll come together to preserve their quote-unquote democracy. They'll table. They might bicker back and forth somehow, but they'll come together when it's work to be done. Sometimes when it's important work to be done and some of these ideologies come in, it derails the whole thing. So I think we got to get beyond a lot of this stuff and start building coalitions to move our people forward. That's the important part. I don't care if somebody use a green book, blue book, no book. We got to come together so we can start moving our people forward.
And the major thing is what Brother Khaled, you mentioned, that when we do the study and analysis, a party can only survive by the financial support that it gets in order to do the things that you said, keep the office running, to be able to do the kind of training. So I think to the listening audience, whether you want to become a party member or not, the support, the financial support, regardless of what that amount is vital. The party that as you laid it out, you're maintaining a historical continuum. I mean, you mentioned the Panthers, you mentioned, you know, the RNA, you mentioned all the formations. So this is not something like it's just out of nowhere. It's a part of our historical continuity. And you put it in the context of where, not necessarily, it comes to my mind, fail, but where we had some more development. Because we had to in time, and what you're doing is, you know, what you put together and what's being put together and what's being implemented is a new understanding for the time of how to do this formation, this political formation. So those two things of people actually financially supporting, as we hear what the, New African Independent Party, I believe is vital, because I think all Black Party formations, that vision and mission is centered in our historical experience has to be supported regardless. And yes, the coalition, right, Elliot, is necessary.
Yes, I agree. Right.
And coalition building is so important. You know, we belong to a few different coalitions, and we definitely belong to a coalition that I need to mention, which is called the Black is Back Coalition. Mm-hmm. And so we belong to the Black is Back Coalition. And the Black is Back Coalition is under the leadership development of a different political party, African People's Socialist Party. And we don't always see eye to eye about every nook and cranny in terms of political philosophy and ideology. But those are my brothers and sisters, and those are my comrades. And so we do work together.
Okay.
And we try to pursue what we collectively believe is in the best interest of the Black community or the African community. So I also belong to the coalition called the Black Left Unity Network, right, which is pushing some other items. And sometimes, you know, coalition members from one coalition don't necessarily agree with coalition members from another coalition. But coalition building is very, very important. You know, the things that we teach here, we teach that individuals make organizations, but it's organizations that make movements. Right. So no matter how smart you think you are, no matter how clever you might be, no matter how brilliant you may see yourself, or other people tell you that you are, it don't mean nothing if you don't know how to get together and work with other people. And it don't mean nothing if the people that you get together with can't step outside of their box and learn how to work with yet another group of people or groups of people. And so that's how you really build a front for national liberation. That's what a real national liberation front looks like, right? It's a group of individuals and organizations and coalitions that become this movement that's pushing for certain things to happen, pushing for certain things to change. And so we have to learn how to do that. And brother, you're absolutely right. Oftentimes, we let ideological differences and ideological tendencies get in the way, right? We will be more understanding and lenient of somebody who's about to sell us a bad automobile or somebody who's selling us bad food than we will sitting across the table from another sister or brother who may slightly disagree with us.
Mm-hmm.
We'll argue with them all damn day and then swear to God or swear by the ancestors we'll never speak to them again. But somebody can sell us a bad house, rent us a bad apartment, sell us a no good car, sell us and give us poison food and poison water, and we'll turn right back around and come back to them again. All they got to do is say they apologize and they sorry. But our own sisters and brothers, you know, we want to give them the death look forever because they don't always agree with everything that we believe in. But meanwhile, we got an enemy that's building coalitions on a regular basis. Not
yes.
coalitions amongst people who look like them. You know, that's another thing we're going to have to deal with. We're going to have to reconfigure our understanding of what this revolutionary struggle looks like. But see, one of the things that very valuable lessons I learned from being part of the Black Panther Party, again, is that, yeah, we're Black and we got to fight for us as Black people, but we have to learn how to build and work with other people who may have some interests that are common to ours, or we may have some things in common that, based upon that commonality, then that strengthens our movement and it strengthens theirs as well. And yeah, we're going to have some contradictions and we're going to have to deal with those contradictions. But we got a bigger enemy. We got a common enemy. And how do we defeat, how can we bring this bigger, larger, common enemy to their knees? Mm. I can't do it by myself. They can't do it by themselves. So we have to come together. So I learned the importance of that type of work through the Black Panther Party and other formations after the Black Panther Party as well. So we are revolutionary nationalists. We are internationalists as well. And so we will work with anybody who's willing to work with us based on our platform, based on our program, and based on the needs of our community. And we will work with people not just within the United States, but people outside of the United States, where we have common cause and common ground to do so.
Let's go to Washington, D.C.
Hello, this is Sister Sean. Can you hear me?
Yes, how are you?
Oh, I'm okay. Peace and blessings. And I've got in maybe for the last 30 minutes. If I'm out of tune, please check me. But I think I hear a lot of conversation around reparations with the new African Independence Party. But I'm calling to announce that here in Washington, D.C., we actually have a proposed legislation and a sponsored legislation that we're trying to get into law. And it is called the D.C. Recovery Act. So it is a form of reparations, but we are calling it recovery versus reparations. It's an active, proposed, and written law. It is nothing that we need to kind of do surveys. I've listened to the brothers, somebody in the New African Independence, I think his name is Brother Hakeem, doing the survey around, you know, maybe tapping into our folks of what we need. We've actually done that through legislation, and that's beautiful. But what I want to put out there is that in order to get it done, one, we can collect amongst ourselves and say what we want, but two, we got to do what we want. And in order to do things in the system that we're living in, and in this politics, everything is done through legislation and law. So the Recovery Act actually speaks to a lot of the ills that Brother Hakeem has, or the National African Independent Party.
Khalid Rahim.
Rahim. Okay, so what it basically speaks to, it speaks to identity restoration, and what that deals with is consciousness and Afrocentric education. We have a mandatory home ownership program. In other words, we're not looking for, in this act, legislation, it's already written, 127 pages. We are looking for not money to purchase homes, but we're actually looking for the existing, we've got a lot of people who have actually paid for houses 10 times over in government programs. So we're looking for home ownership. We're looking for judicial protection. But what judicial protections means is basically relief from all of the disparities we've undergone through police brutality. We're looking for, we're very, very into the elderly relief and the support of Black families. And part of the Recovery Act kind of speaks to a big issue that we think affects us, which is child support and the issue of the Black man owning child support. So right. What we do through the Recovery Act is we are relieving all Black men from any obligations of child support.
Do me a favor. If you would like to share that information with Brother Khalid and the New African Independence Party, that would be great. And maybe
Can I jump in for a minute,
yes.
Brother
wait,
and sister?
Go ahead.
Let me say, no.
Hold on, Sister Sean. Hold on.
Not wasting his time.
Okay.
I'm already familiar with the Recovery Act. I'm already familiar with the legislation that was submitted. Actually, I was on the phone with one of the two brothers who were leading this initiative. I was on the phone with them about a year or so, maybe about 2 years ago.
Okay.
I'm also familiar with their communication with NCOBRA. And you guys have a website. You posted some of the information on the website. I know that it's a good piece of legislation, but it's specific to Washington, D.C., right? It doesn't cover the entire United States. Let me finish this point. So the survey that the party is facilitating through this campaign, the survey is for anybody around the country. And what I forgot to mention is that right now, for example, with the folks who have responded, we have respondents from 25 states around the country, right? 25 states around the country. People from 25 different states have responded thus far. All right. So I definitely appreciate the work that's being done with the Recovery Act legislation, but again, it's specific to the District of Columbia. And it's a great piece of work. It's something that perhaps we all could benefit from. But I just want to put that out there. Number one, I am familiar with it. Okay. And okay, I think it's a great piece of work.
And the thing I would like to interject on this, Sister Shawna, the thing that I would like to interject on that, because it seems that because of the Recovery Act going through and D.C. doing this kind of work, and both of y'all can correct me if I'm wrong, the survey, since it is, the Recovery Act is specific to D.C., but the survey is national, and both of them is dealing with reparations, one in a different name, but still reparations the same. It could be helpful to the party if, and correct me again, that D.C. Assist in getting, surveying its area as a part of increasing the amount of people getting those views as you go through the process for the legislation. So, and I'm posing that as a question to both of y'all. Does that make sense?
Well, that makes sense to me, brother, but I also got to say this too. Our campaign is purposely titled A Campaign for Reparations and Black Self-Determination. And I'll be very brief as to why we have them both together the way that we do. Because see, here up in Pittsburgh, we've talked about this, and I've talked to people about this on numerous occasions. We foresee the possibility that the more that the heat is put on the United States government and the businesses and corporations and universities and financial companies, all of these folks, the more that the heat is put on them to pay reparations, we can foresee the possibility that the U.S. government and all these businesses and institutions will concede to pay black people reparations. They may not concede on the amount that you and I would agree upon, but they would concede. And so they will pay us the reparation checks or the reparation benefits, but because we have no self-determination, because we still don't control our own economy, we still don't control the institutions that govern the quality of our lives, then 9 times out of 10, those reparation checks and benefits will just once again be fed through the American system of capitalism, right? And we'll be back in the same boat that we've been in for a long time. We'll probably have a lot more trinkets and a lot more things to play with, you know, a 70-inch screen TV, and instead of one car, two cars, right? Maybe a 5-bedroom house instead of a 2-bedroom apartment. But we still won't be a free people, and we still won't have any determination over what goes on with our lives. And the reparations argument will be null and void because reparations would have been paid. But black people still won't be a free people. So that's why with our particular campaign, we made a very conscious, deliberate decision to make sure that as we push and fight for reparations, we also going to push and fight for self-determination. And that's why within our national survey, we ask those questions that speak to issues of self-determination, like how you define yourself. Do you see black people as a separate entity? Would you support the creation of an independent nation? Do you support proportional representation? See, those are questions of self-determination, not just questions of reparation. So I just want to put that out there for the listening audience, if anybody else to consider.
Okay. Sister, thank you for
So, Brother Elliot, so what I would like to say, what I was trying to get across, that here in the District of Columbia, the brother, much love and respect. Much love and respect. Everything fundamentally, and anything that you fundamentally support, we fundamentally support. And you are absolutely right that it is, that the Recovery Act is exclusive to the District of Columbia. But here's what I need to point out, and here's what we need to get in terms of understanding.
Well, you got 1 minute, Sister Sean, because we got other calls. I want you to kind of make it concise.
Well, the Recovery Act is, in other words, if you get the Recovery Act legislated in the District of Columbia, because of the way that we are structured, we are federalized. So if we can establish it here in the District of Columbia, that actually sets precedent where people can take recovery by the way and by the form of recovery to other cities and states without much due harm or what I would say difficulty. When you say reparations, our people, they're scared of that. Reparations actually is a legal term. It has criminal, criminality attached to it. People, you know, and we have not, we've been talking about reparations and we have not gotten anything in terms of reparations in I don't know how many years. So we have active legislation.
Okay.
But we're not just talking about a survey.
Okay.
Legislation to propose to law. And I wanted to, I was trying to do an introduction, but one of the proposers and the writers of the law is on the line with me. The proposer of the law is here, John.
Listen, Sister Sean. Brother Cheeks reached out to me a couple of weeks ago. We're going to get him on. But right now we're dealing with this particular topic and we want to move on. But thank you for your contribution.
Okay.
We'll be calling you back, sir. Thank you.
So that's, all right. That's John there, and it's related. So we were hoping to have some input.
All right.
Thanks. Well, you could call me. I mean, you could be on. First of all, you can get, you can always call me. The brother that you just introduced, I spoke to this brother before. So
yes, how you doing?
Call me. That's right. How you doing, brother? Good to hear your voice again. All right. We've talked before.
We're all on the same page, but we just need to come together. That's all.
Well, yeah. But I'm saying we have a campaign for reparations and black self-determination. This survey is a national survey. It's a tool. It's a tool that we're using. It's not the only thing that the campaign is going to be utilizing. We have other things planned as well. But give me a call or send your number again through the brother who's hosting the show. And we all can talk again, and we can try to work together.
Yeah, but I think it's very related. Both of you brothers have something important to say.
Yeah, thank you.
Why they don't have the time to say?
Okay,
I mean, we've got, Sister Sean.
But other people are trying to get through as well, and I think that's what the host is trying to say. Me and this brother have spoken before, and we will speak again, God willing, and you as well. It will happen.
Let's go to 412. 412? Pittsburgh, 412. Okay, let's another call. 412? Okay, maybe they, let's go to 646. 646?
Yeah, hold up, Brother Elliot Richard, into your guest. Basically, I just want to ask you a quick question or two. What has been your major achievement so far in regards to what you're trying to put together at this time?
Well, the major achievement that I think so far is that we now have black people and other people realizing that black folks don't have to be exclusively Democrat or Republican, and that there are some viable options when we talk about electoral politics. And that we need to incorporate a much more revolutionary and radical perspective in whatever our politics happen to be.
Can you define that? Can you define what you see and determine to be revolutionary, please?
Well, basically, revolutionary means to replace the existing system with a different system that's going to serve the needs of the people who believe that the current system needs to be overturned. So to me, that's revolutionary.
So with the majority of the special ed Negroes who love the Democratic Party as much as they do, do you find that you've been able to do any sort of psychological upliftment to their feeble, broken minds? Because it seems to me that they're not going to get off the Democratic ticket.
Okay, well, my response to your question is, number one, I don't see them that way. I don't see them as feeble-minded. I don't see them as backward, per se. I see them as being misled. I see them as being products of their upbringing, their social conditioning, and products of the political culture that we currently live in. Most of us on this call, I would venture to say, we're not born into the movement or into the struggle. That most of the folks that I've heard seem to be people who are a little older, and if that be the case, most of us, you know, did some stuff in our past that wasn't positive, or we lived a lifestyle, even if it wasn't a negative lifestyle, we lived a lifestyle that wasn't very enlightening. We weren't always politically aware or socially conscious people. At some point, we were introduced to some information or to some events or activities or people who helped us to grow in a different direction, right? So the folks who are Democrats, I don't put them down. See, my beef is not with the brothers and sisters who are members of the Democratic Party. My beef is with the Democratic Party leadership itself that has intentionally and purposely kept black people and other people in the position in the state that we're in. My beef is with them. My beef is not with the brothers and sisters who are members of the Democratic Party, because a lot of them, when given an opportunity to exercise and make a better choice for themselves, they will, they do, and they have. I've seen it with my own eyes, right? So,
but isn't the head of the Democratic Party a black man and a Hispanic?
Well, yeah, but I'm not talking about just color. See, once again, we got to think about this thing a little differently, because if we think about it just in terms of color, we're going to always let ourselves be tricked and always be manipulated. Capitalism is capitalism. If you put a black in front of capitalism, it doesn't make it better. It's still capitalism. Exploitation is exploitation. Injustice is injustice. If you're a black person that does injustice, you're no better than a white person who's doing injustice. Just because you're black, that don't make you better. If you're doing wrong, you're doing wrong. So whether the head is a black person or not, you know, it doesn't make any difference. I was just reading recently.
No, it does make a difference.
No, it doesn't.
It does make a difference, and I'll tell you why.
No, it doesn't make a difference. Check this out. If I punch you side the mouth, and if a white boy punch you side the mouth, right, you still got punched in the mouth. Now, you may feel about it differently. You may respond differently, or you may feel about it differently, but you still got punched in the mouth. I may have punched you in the mouth harder, right? So the bottom line is the injustice is an injustice, and we got to deal with it that way. The issue of race and class, we got to come to understand what it really means for us if we really want to be free.
Sir,
if not, we're going to continue to keep going in circles like we have been for almost 50 years. Because
you know
now
why we
what
going
we're
in
dealing
circles?
With, now,
I'll tell you why
now,
we're going in circles.
Now what we're dealing
two
with
individuals
now.
Individuals are being used.
Well, Jay, let me say, hold on.
To do their business.
Jay, let me say something.
Exactly.
Jay,
exactly.
Listen.
But this is what I'm trying to
around.
Get you to.
No, he understands that, Jay. Listen
brother,
to me. Brother Khalid, hold on one second.
We got to look at this stuff a little differently. I'll just close it there.
And let me say this, Jay. Listen, the man understands. I don't know whether you heard the program from the beginning. When you asked him what does nationalism or freedom mean or whatever, that was stated from the beginning of this program when I read the planks of the platforms. Now, this show is dedicated to brothers and sisters around this country that are trying to alleviate this problem of our people and point our people towards sovereignty and freedom. You don't have to give the man the third degree. He had already stated it. If you think what this brother is, wait a minute. You're going to have to wait. I'm the host here. If you think what this brother's doing has some validity, then join in with him. Join in. Don't join in with the Sharptons and the other people you're going to criticize, because they might be Uncle Toms, like you said. And listen, I don't mind calling them a Tom if they're a Tom. But if you realize they're a Tom, it's all right to talk about them sometimes, but join in with people that's trying to do something. You don't always have to give people the third degree. If you see what these people are doing, brothers and sisters that are trying to move our people towards sovereignty and freedom, join in, man. Come on, man. You got to stop this. You're too intelligent for that.
Elliot, I didn't hear the beginning.
Oh, well, you got to see. That's what I'm. Well, see, then you had a
disagreement.
Then you blew out of tune, because this man stated all this from the beginning.
And the point is, once I asked him the question, and he said what he said in regards to those being the ones who control Perez and Ellison and the rest of the party, then I understood. I didn't understand in the beginning because I came in a little late. But no, I'm not trying to give him a third degree. Once I understood what he was saying, then we're in agreement. You know? Because the bottom line is, we all being used in one way or another. The point is, are we awakening to the point to where we're not going to be used and we're going to move forward in what you're saying? And based on what his answer was, then that's what I gathered. I didn't hear the beginning of the program. Yeah, that was my mistake. I came in late.
Well, thank you. Okay, well, brother, it's no problem. Thank you very much for your comments, and thank you for your questioning. In terms of us being more activist-oriented, one of the things that I would suggest you do, if you haven't already done so, is to join the party. You could go to our Facebook page to join as a Facebook member, and you could be you could become a regular member by going to our website, which is www.newafrican.org. Just go to newafrican.org. That's New African spelled with a K, .org. You'll see New African Independence Party, and it'll list for you, you know, who we are and something about our history, our background, our programs, our projects, and different events and activities. If you look on the page called Membership and Organization, you can click that page, scroll down, fill out the membership form, and you could join online. Our membership fee is $5 a month, right, which is $60 a year. You can waive payment of it right away. You can pay when you get some money in your pocket. But you can join this evening. And if you join the party that way, then we also would suggest, and it shouldn't be difficult for you to do because you don't support the Democratic Party if you haven't already done so, you go down to the Board of Elections, register as a voter under New African Independence Party. See, that's the other thing. You can do that. You can register because we are a bona fide independent political party. So whether you're in Philadelphia, you're in New York, you're in North Carolina, South Carolina, you can go to your Board of Elections, you can go to your registrar, and you can register under New African Independence Party. Right?
Well, I'm registered as an independent already.
Well,
Are you in every state?
Right now we have members and we have supporters in about 30 states around the country.
Okay.
So you know, I mean, that's how we are. But people aren't as active as they should be. Some people are Facebook members. Some people are regular members. But they're not really active the way that they need to be active. So what I'm saying to you is, yeah, it's good that you're registered as an independent, but you could go down to the Board of Elections tomorrow and register specifically as a member of our party. Okay, so you know, any way you want to do it is fine by me. But
all right, well, I will definitely make that move right after I get off the phone. Now, what is your position coming up with these elections in November? What direction are you trying to get the people to go forward in?
Well, I think that the midterm elections, as they're called, what we're going to get is a bunch of people from Democratic Party are going to run because they want to regain Democratic Party leadership and control in Congress. I think, again, we're going to have mostly women of color who are going to be used for that push. Especially, well, I shouldn't say mostly women of color, but definitely women of color within districts that are basically districts of color where they have large numbers of black or brown people. I think in the long run, black folks and brown folks and poor white folks as well are going to be very disappointed because the Democratic Party is not a revolutionary radical party. At home, it's a party of economic exploitation and capitalism. And outside the United States, it's a party of imperialism and war. So in the long run, it's going to basically do what the Republicans and the Democrats have historically done, which is to make sure that the U.S. empire remains intact. Now, it will give you certain benefits, certain privileges, and it may expand certain rights. But it's not going to give you freedom and liberation. It's certainly not going to give freedom and liberation for black folks in this country. So I don't expect too much in the long run to come out of the midterm elections. I think in the short run, it's going to shake up traditional politics in the country. I think that the Republicans on the national level are probably going to lose some members in the House, maybe in the Senate, but mostly in the House. I think when it comes to the statewide races, I think that state reps, state senates may lose some Republican members. I think that the state governors, I think they're going to remain basically in the hands of the Republican Party. Most of the governors of the United States, as we speak, are Republicans, not Democrats, right? So I think you'll see some change there, but it won't be substantial. I think when it comes to Congress people, though, I think you're going to see
some serious changes. I think a lot of Republicans are going to lose their jobs, and you're going to have Democrats taking their jobs as a result of the midterm elections. But again, we have to be politically educated enough to understand that this is not the first time that something like this has happened. As a matter of fact, I'm going to say this briefly about it. Over 25 years ago, almost 20 years ago, when Clarence Thomas was going up, and he had been nominated for a Supreme Court justice, and the whole situation came out about his relationship with Anita Hill, who at that point was a law professor. There was so much political backlash from the response of the U.S. Senate during a confirmation hearing that a lot of women decided to get involved in politics. And so the next upcoming cycle was known as the Year of the Woman. And a lot of women got involved and they ran for office. Some of those women are still in office. Some of those women are still in the U.S. Congress today, in the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. They came in on the coattails of the controversy around Clarence Thomas and his confirmation hearings to become a U.S. Supreme Court justice versus the allegations and charges that had been made by Anita Hill, who at that point was a law professor. So think about what happened then, think about what's going on now, and think about how little change for Black people between that last episode of women deciding to get involved in politics and the conditions that Black people are living through now. It's not about whether more women run for Congress or more Black people run for Congress or more Latino people or Asian people run for Congress. That's not the real issue. The issue is, what is their platform? What political party do they come from? Whose interests do they really represent? Somebody earlier was speaking about all the money involved in politics, even the money involved in activism. For example, folks talk about the Black Lives Matter movement without realizing that, and you know, I'm not talking about the rank and file people who are out here marching and demonstrating, but Black Lives Matter received a $100 million grant from the Ford Foundation about a year ago. A lot of people don't know that. Black Lives Matter is basically done. They've been bought and sold already as far as their leadership. So those are the kind of politics that we have to educate ourselves on. We got to understand that if we're going to have a genuine movement for freedom and a genuine political party that's going to help to represent that movement for freedom, that it has to be accountable to the people that it speaks for, which means that the people that it speaks for have to be willing to support that movement and have to be willing to support that party, that organization. That means they have to make the donations. That means they have to sacrifice the time. That means they have to get involved. That means they have to join. Because if not, you're going to have organizations and fake movements that emerge and candidates that just pop up, and they're all going to be paid for by our enemies and adversaries. And so we're going to be smiling and grinning, thinking that it's a victory, when in essence, it's just another nail in the coffin.
Brother Jay,
let me ask a quick question.
Go ahead.
When you talk about Black Lives Matter and the hundred and some million dollars that we see, could you give me an idea, or give the audience also an idea, on who received that money and where did that money go? And who benefited from the money? Was it individuals, small groups, or what?
No. What you could do is you could go online and do the research on your own. Look for the Movement for Black Lives Matter. See, understand there's different components to the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, there's the hashtag Black Lives Matter. There's the sisters who started Black Lives Matter. And then there's the Movement for Black Lives Matter. Look under the Movement for Black Lives Matter. Go to their website. Look into some information about funding and financing. Or better yet, Just go online, Google Black Lives Matter Ford Foundation grant, and it'll pop up. You read it for yourself. Ford Foundation allocated a $100 million grant to Black Lives Matter, or the Movement for Black Lives Matter, about a year or so ago. And so there's different groups of organizations that are part of that. And so they will get funding to do the work based on the platform of the Movement for Black Lives Matter. Now, when they started putting this stuff together before the money thing came out, they, you know, they got a core group of people and they organized amongst themselves. Then they asked other groups of organizations, including us, including the NAIP, to support them. So we signed on thinking we were just supporting the overall movement, right? Later on, we found out that it was a core group of other organizations. They were basically lobbying to get this money. And so that's what they did. They got a $100 million grant from the Ford Foundation.
And they ain't so, even counting what they get from the Soros money that came into them.
Well, yeah. Well, George Soros is another financier for a lot of the social justice campaigns and activities that goes on. I don't know him personally. I don't know what kind of person he is. But I know that if you want to have a movement that's going to be impactful in the long run, not just in the short run, but in the long run, you got to find ways to support it yourself. You cannot allow your enemies to support your movement, because once you allow your enemy to become the main financial supporter for your movement, your enemy will control it, they will contain it, they will subvert it.
It was an interesting conversation this evening, Brother Khalid. Before you leave us, I want you to give all the things that you need to, the website, how people can get involved, the Facebook page, Twitter, anything, all the information you want to lay out tonight, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I want to say, well, thank you for this opportunity to speak to your audience and to share some information about the NAIP, New African Independence Party. We're an independent black political party located here within the United States of America. If you want to get some additional information about us, you can go to our website at newafrican.org, and that's African spelled with a K. You can also check us out on Facebook. Look for New African Independence Party. You'll probably come across a whole bunch of Facebook pages. Those are state pages. Like I said, we're in about 30 states around the country. You can also go to our blog page, website. We have another blog page and website, which is called New African Speaks. And you could get some information there. We also have a Twitter account, same thing, New African Independence Party or New African. So those are some of the ways that you can stay in touch with us. Right now, we have three active campaigns. One campaign is for the creation of a civilian police review board for Allegheny County. The party, we initiated the process. But it's not just us. It involves the party as well as other groups, organizations, and individuals. And so together we're called the Committee for a Civilian Police Review Board of Allegheny County. But the party also has initiated a campaign for reparations and black self-determination. Again, you could go on Facebook and check it out. We also have a blog page, which is Campaign for, and not F-O-R, but the number four, Campaign for Reparations and Black Self-Determination, .wordpress.com. You can check us out there. And so, you know, again, we have different things that we do. We have things we do every year. We also engage with electoral politics, and we're also always involved with the constant struggle and to move forward an agenda and to implement an agenda for black freedom and for black self-determination. And we also believe in helping with the freedom and with the determination of others as well. But we put ourselves first and foremost. We are an independent political party. We're nationalists in the sense that we believe in black nationhood in a revolutionary way, but we also support and we respect the struggles of all oppressed people, whether they be African or whether they be non-African. We're also internationals. So we think it's important to unite with other Africans and non-Africans who find themselves oppressed and who reach out for mutual support. We also believe in coalition building. We talked about being on internationalists. We also believe in developing coalitions locally, regionally, and nationally. We,
belong to the Black is Back Coalition, and we also belong to the Black Left Unity Network, and we also belong to a few local coalitions or work groups as well.
And I know that you had been to the Universal African People's
African People's Organization. Based in
Ferguson,
in Ferguson, Missouri. That's mm-hmm. through Brother Zaki Baroudi.
Yes.
Well, we, the party as well as his group, we all belong to the Black is Back Coalition.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so that's our connection. So Brother Zaki and I, we belong to our respective groups, but our groups also belong to the Black is Back Coalition.
Working together.
We're both members of the Black is Back Coalition's National Steering Committee as well.
And see, that's what I love to see. I love to see that coalition. I love to see that coming together.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it doesn't require us to agree 100% about everything, but it does require us to support each other on the major things that matter, not just to our organizations, but the things that matter to our people.
Okay.
And so that's what this is about.
Hey, Brother Clear, the Black Union that you've been, the initiative, one of the initiatives, is that of a particular trade or
no.
In general, blacks can getting involved?
Yeah, general.
Good.
General. We're in the process of organizing a universal union for black people, period. Doesn't matter what area you happen to work in, whether you work in an office, you work in a factory, whether you work in computer-based technology, no matter what it is. And it doesn't require you to withdraw from your primary union, right? So you could belong to more than one union. That's another thing we need to realize. You don't have to belong to just one union. So for those people who belong to, say, the AFL-CIO, or they belong to SEIU, within the, they belong to United Steelworkers, Carpenters Union, whatever, you could still join this particular union. This union is going to be focused on representing the interests of black workers, represent the interests of black people, and represent the interests of the neighborhoods and the communities that we come from. And making sure that the unions, if you do belong to another union, making sure that it represents your interests. If you don't belong to another union, then we will become your primary union, and we will represent your interests as a labor spokesperson. So, yeah, so that's what this is about.
Brother Glenn, I'm going to be in touch with you. The door is always open. On Time for Awakening, you can come in, let our people know developments, what's going on, things of that nature, and I'll be in touch with you, because there's some things that myself and Brother Richard are planning here in Philadelphia within the next month or two, and I want to get you involved in it.
Okay, well, thank you, brother. Thank you both. I appreciate the opportunity, and again, thank you for the invitation to talk about the party, and hopefully some of your listeners, all of your listeners, I hope, will get involved and join the New African Independence Party. And if you don't join the party, at least support our different campaigns and support our different initiatives, and think about how you can do the same in whatever part of the country that you happen to live in. Think about starting a chapter of the party in your city, or think about expanding the campaigns into your city or into your state or county. So thank you again. All power to the people, and free the land.
I'll be in touch, brother.
Peace, man.
Richard?
Yes, sir.
Interesting discussion, man. And it kind of dovetails on some of the things that that are being planned here. You know, mm-hmm. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's a party that can be started with a chapter being started. And I'll use the example of this city. A wheel don't have to be reinvented.
Right.
It's already sanctioned. The paperwork is in. I'll just use those terms. Just needs to develop candidates and interested brothers and sisters that want to run under that banner.
Sounds good.
Oh, man.
We're
I love
all
it.
Here, and I'm definitely encouraged and motivated to, just keep the networking together, the power, the communication, and bringing these entities together. We'll see that. As we close, Elliot, my mind out of our conversation with Brother Khalid goes in all these different directions. But one thing that I think that he helps us do is that we have to become
centered in our narrative that it's about us, not about what other people are doing, what they can do, what they have done, only as it relates to what we are doing and what we need to do. And I just find that our narrative, as we work through this, it's important to get the perspective so that we can have the appropriate narrative that we're talking about. How do we create power or sovereignty or a national base and stay within our historical framework that's just ours compared to what other people are doing? And I think it's a lot of, as one of the programs that's still in Time for Awakening, is it's a lot of diamonds in our fields, and we're not picking them up.
Yeah, listen, I can't say it no better, Richard. Can't say it no better. Just want to let the folks know about the lineup again. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshi from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on Monday evenings from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed on Time for an Awakening. And from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365 Connect with Sister Nataki and Brother Talib on Tuesday from 8 to 10 in the evenings. Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesday evening. On Wednesday, Revive is back with Sister POC from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Time for an Awakening. And Friday, Time for Awakening is back from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. Again, I want to thank our guest that was with us this evening, activist, organizer, and founder of the New African Independence Party, Brother Khalid Rahim. And I want to thank the listening audience for being with us this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman. Oh, children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.